The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes, on this beautiful, beautiful Thursday. Nice and chilly today, very fall-like. And then it's going to move into the weekend, where I understand it's going to be equally as nice, maybe a little bit warmer, maybe, I don't know. But we have a great weekend ahead of us, of course. We always have Friday Night Lights with high school football, Saturday at Memorial Stadium, this Sunday, I'll be at the Colts game. It's one of my obligations that I signed up for about 4 or 5 years ago, so I will be missing our Little League football game on Sunday, but based on a little intel, I don't think we're going to have any issue. Last weekend, our guys went out and stomped the opponent in a big way, so I think we have the best team in the league. Once again, we're going to – hopefully we win it all. And it'll be my farewell tour. I've been saying it for the last 10 years, but yes, no, really 5 years. I believe this would be my farewell tour. So anyway, hopefully we go out with a big bang. I'll keep you apprised of all of that as the season progresses, but it's going to be a fun show. Hot Rod will be with us in just a few minutes. A lot of Fed members out there talking. And in fact, I was going to do a little news of the week, but first I'll mention this. Kenny Blaine Auctions, they are your full-service auction service. I got to see Nikki and Durkee and Alex at the ball game last Saturday. In fact, Alex is one of our parking attendants at the Bloomington Speedway as well. That's our last race, by the way, is Friday night. If you want to come out, enjoy that as well. That's a big, big deal, too. They are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them, as always, online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And like Law Group, give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. So there's been a lot of news, right, around Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook issuing subpoenas as part of an inquiry on whether she submitted fraudulent information on a mortgage application, according to U.S. officials familiar with the matter. The initial scrutiny has centered on Cook's properties in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Atlanta, with investigators using grand juries as part of the probe, the officials said. So, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I don't know exactly all the details on this, and honestly, I don't care. But this kind of stuff happens all the time, especially when it comes to putting a homestead exemption on, or maybe buying a place in a jurisdiction so you can run for office. Happens all the time. Happens at the local levels, state levels, national levels, all the time. So just like the gerrymandering stuff that everyone's up in arms about, that's been going on forever. I think it's terrible to see a district that starts somewhere down in Louisville and maybe runs up a highway and then opens up great big. I mean, but look at every state in the union. They're all gerrymandered up. Maybe you just do away with gerrymandering. I don't know how you break up the districts, maybe by population. I have no idea how to do it. But I do know that you're only supposed to have one homestead exemption. But I have had clients who are extremely, extremely, I don't know how you want to put it, just set in their ways. And they say, nope, we're going to have two homestead exemptions, one here in Bloomington and one in Florida. So they actually do a legal separation to allow them to somehow get both. I think you can get a homestead exemption if you have a rent-to-own contract, a contract sale, obviously if it's your personal residence, but it helps a lot on real estate taxes, especially here in Monroe County. I mean, from an investor, it would probably cut your real estate taxes in about half. So I don't know much about that, but I do know that we're going to talk to Rob because a lot of Fed officials have been out yapping. Let's see. The Trump administration seeks swift Supreme Court review on tariffs. We've got the pump and dump worries prompted NASDAQ to tighten China listing. Now, this is interesting, right? The NASDAQ is seeking to tighten its rules for small Chinese stocks following criticism from Wall Street veterans and investor protection advocates that such listings have become a hotbed for fraud and manipulation. So basically what happens is these small companies, they list and then they start getting promoted online, you know, whatever, and the stock goes up. And the stock goes up because people are buying and no one's selling. And then guess what? The people that own a bunch of the stock start selling. And that's what they call the pump it and dump it. It's been going on for years as well. Again, not right, but it happens. July brought some steady hiring and layoff rates. The hiring and layoffs were broadly steady in July, according to data published Wednesday by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. A pretty assuring sign about the labor market. And let's see, there's some fears about the job outlooks and all that kind of stuff, but that all drives into the data that the Fed's going to use, so I'll let Rod talk about that. And gold has slipped a little after a record rally. U.S. payroll reports are on the radar. So let's talk about gold. So gold has been on a tear for a while. In fact, Julian Albertini, who is the portfolio manager at First Eagle Global, was our guest on the show back in the springtime, and we talked a lot about gold, and I think if you really want to hear it, you could probably dig through the archives on WGCLradio.com and find it, or even go to the Your Money with David Hayes podcast app and search for it that way, and I think you'll find it very prophetic, let's just put it that way, and very, very interesting. But we're still looking at gold around $3,500 an ounce. I had 10 one-ounce gold coins that I sold about, I don't even know when I sold them, I don't know, 5 years ago, because they were around $2,800 an ounce. I'm like, I'm going to sell them because I think I bought them at $1,500. Well, here we are, $3,500. Seems to be a pretty good inflation hedge over time. I'm not going to read this article because I don't agree with it, from the Wall Street Journal, which I love the Wall Street Journal, and Americans lose faith that hard work leads to economic gains. That comes from a Wall Street Journal poll. And I'm trying to find out, I'm always curious how many people they actually do a survey with. And usually it's like, you know, 100 out of 1,000 people. What the hell is that? 1,000 people? Come on, give me a break. So anyway, I'm not even going to give that article any justice at all. But I'm going to give this one some justice. The 4% rule is now the 4.7% rule that matters to your retirement in the USA today. Okay, so let's talk about 3 decades ago, financial advisor Bill Binnigan created a retirement principle called the 4% rule, and it went viral. This was back when I first started in the business back in the 90s. Now the rule's getting an update. The 4% rule, you should plan to spend 4% of your savings the first year of retirement, spend the same amount adjusted for inflation each year, and that's how the 4% rule works. And they said you're never going to run out of money, but they're revising it to 4.7%. Now, back then, they said 50% stocks, 50% bonds. I think they're now up to around 7 asset classes. Nowadays, financial advisors often recommend that retirement savers diversify across a lot larger list of asset classes, not me, which might include several types of stocks, bonds, real estate, cash, and equivalents. Well, that's kind of like me. And a fewer investors park their money half in stocks and half in bonds. It's kind of funny because the Nobel Peace Prize was given on modern portfolio theory. And at the end of the day, the person that won the Nobel Prize said, I know my theory, and I know I won the Nobel Prize for like how much to have the stocks and bonds and real estate and cash to have the optimal return, the least amount of risk, but he couldn't take the ups and downs of the market, so he just put his money in 50-50, and this was like in the 50s, I think, and he won the Nobel Prize for not even following his own thing. The 4% rule began back in 1994 as some math paper that he wrote for the Journal of Financial Planning. If retirees started out with that rate of spending, he reasoned that their savings plan would last for at least 30 years, inflation adjusted. The actual figure was like 4.15, but he rounded down to 4. And then the rule took off, even surprising the author. And he said back, he said, "It's surreal." Bingen said, "I can't believe I'm still doing this 30 years later." Now, What's crazy about that is just a few years ago, the 4% rule is dead, right? Morningstar, the Center for Financial Planning, everybody was writing about it back even in 2021. The 4% rule is dead. It's now 3%, 2%, 3.3%, you name it. Why? Because we went through this long, long, long period of time where bonds were yielding practically nothing. So if you're now you're banking on the market to give you the return. So if I have zero, if I have one or two on half my money, 8 to 12 on the other half of my money, boom, you do 50-50. There you are. And they're like, well, you inflate, you know, with inflation and blah, 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 you're not here for never going to keep up. So they reduced it down to 2 and 3. I never believed that either. But that's why we use the bucket method, because the bucket or siloing your investments to meet the goal of that investment will pretty much eradicate this worry, this fear. Because if I have money sitting in a bucket that I don't plan to touch for 10 plus years, I just let it rip. Money I'm going to need to put that roof on my house, that's in the bank. Money that I'm going to need for my retirement income for the next few years until Social Security starts, that's in a nice little laddered bond portfolio, a fixed indexed annuity or a multi-year guaranteed annuity, something that's guaranteed or contractual. That's all I'm saying. And then maybe a section of what I would call a protected strategy, where I get a little bit more opportunity if the market does well, but I have protection on the downside. And then the full throttle pedal to the metal money that hopefully is just ripping it is 10 years away. And if you think about it, yeah, at 7.2% money doubles every 10. I use that all the time. But the reality of it is if pedal's down on the metal and I have 10 years, I'm hoping to make more than that. 8 to 12 maybe? I guess there's no guarantees, right? There's no guarantee of future results based on past performance. We've heard that only a gazillion times. But it works. It works so well in the 90s that people were like, 4%? Are you crazy? Because we had the roaring 90s going on. 1994, when I started, that's when this 4% rule sort of became the thing. And by 1996, 97, 98, when we're knocking down 30% returns every year, they're like, you're crazy. 4%? We can spend all 10%. And there were actually models built on that. There were illustrations on variable life insurance policies built on that 12% return. And you kind of drink the Kool-Aid. When you're a young guy like me, I'm like, okay, this rule of that we've been following that I have helped create of putting this, you know, now and soon and later approach with my investments, and that also includes tax diversification, because sometimes you want to pull it from this account or that account or this account to maximize your tax situation, you look like an idiot, because all of a sudden it's like, why would you have any money anywhere else but the crazy stock market? That's why I look at the dot-com era going back to 2000 and like, you know what, that reminds me a little bit of the AI stuff we're involved with now with that, because, you know, it's like everything with an AI attached to it is just gone crazy. At the end of the day, and there's even a couple companies, I think I mentioned it last week on the show or a couple weeks ago, that doesn't even do anything with AI, but just happens to have the word AI in its name, and it's gone crazy. It's kind of like .com. There, I mean, how well did that work out, right? For toys.com, pets.com. I don't know if pets.com is still around or not. But anyway, all those .coms, it was like everyone's throwing money at them. The AI is the same way. I think it'll work out at the end, like the car industry in the 20s or whatever year where there were hundreds of car manufacturers and it ended up being just a handful. Same thing with the big, you know, the big dot-com tech people. It became just a handful. And I think the AI world probably will be the same as well. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's get Hot Rod on the phone. We have a short week this week, right? Here we are already on Thursday. I feel like the week just started. We'll get Hot Rod's opinion on what's going on. Lots of focus on speeches by Fed governors and officials around. We had, what else we have going on? Oh, we have the Colts and Dolphins playing on Sunday, and Hot Rod's going to the game with me. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back, get him on the phone. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Man, I was long-winded in that first segment. I apologize. Normally, I try to keep it to 5 minutes. I went 14 minutes as I keep my little timer here to the side. Let's talk a little bit about last week, and then we'll get Hot Rod here on the phone. Stocks ended the week a little bit lower as mixed economic data led to some profit-taking by investors ahead of the holiday weekend. The S&P, NASDAQ, and Dow all were down just a little bit. Stocks initially rose, but then took a breather as investors continued to process Fed Chairman Powell. We're going to get to Rod's comments on this later. His comments from the Fed's annual symposium, stocks regained momentum midweek as investors awaited for the second quarter reports from the nation's most influential AI company. The AI chip maker posted results Wednesday night with kind of a mixed reception in after-hour trading. Then on Thursday, stocks rallied, which helped the S&P close above 6,500 for the very first time. Then on Friday, the Fed's favorite inflation gauge, personal consumption expenditure index, aligned with expectations. Still, stocks were under pressure from the opening bell as investors appeared to take profits ahead of the Labor Day weekend. Not sure if that had anything to do with it, the Labor Day weekend or not. But we've had some mixed economic news. Revised GDP numbers show the economy grew more quickly in the second quarter in 2025 than initially thought, which was a win for the economic bulls. But, the economic bears pointed out that orders of durable goods declined and the trade deficit was wider than expected. The PCE report, while in line with expectations, was at 2.9% annual rate in July. And of course, that leads to the fact that we're watching very closely every piece of economic data for insights on what the Fed will do with interest rates at its two-day meeting, which ends not long from now, maybe a couple weeks, September 17th. So, Hot Rod, we have a lot of speeches going on right now. Fed officials are out there, you know, blabbing and blabbing until their blackout period begins for the September meetings. And it seems to be all eyes are on the Fed.
Yeah, most certainly are. And the odds of a September rate cut have jumped back up to around that 80 to 90% likelihood. Another, I think, about 50% then for another rate cut. I think they skip October. So I think it goes September, November, December. And I haven't seen the probability on December, but I do know that there was at least some chatter that the market is starting to price in three rate cuts this year. I think Fed member Waller, I think he may have been one that had even mentioned that he believed that September was the time to begin cutting and that he saw three rate cuts, I think, this year and potentially as many as five between now and early 2026 off of that. The data is really going to drive it, but I think the data that has come out up to this point continues to signal that the Fed may be better off going ahead and dropping 25 basis points in September just to get the ball rolling and moving. Because once again, this week we had ADP jobs and it came out a little bit lighter than expected. It was expected to only be 75,000 jobs added. It came in at, I think it was 55,000. So a little bit softer. So we're still consistently seeing softness within the labor market. The consumer continues to look decent. You know, that PCE number that you mentioned in which inflation came in at expectations, that does have an inflationary component that gets, component that gets released that in addition to the revised GDP number also has consumption data within it. And it's showing that the consumer is still consuming, that the consumer is still doing okay in that regard. And what I keep saying on Glass's show is the Fed doesn't want to wait or shouldn't wait until the data tells them they most certainly have to cut rates now. If you do that, it's too late. So to get out in front of it, and the biggest thing that I have said and the biggest disappointment I had with the Fed's last the last meeting when Chairman Powell talked as though he didn't necessarily see rates, you know, being cut, and he was more concerned about the inflationary pressures of tariffs. We know that his next speech with Jackson Hole, he kind of changed that tune a little bit. But what I said at that last meeting when he had said that was I would have felt more comfortable if the reason that he didn't foresee rate cuts coming and was more concerned about inflation was if he started talking about we're far closer to neutral than what we ever guessed. But that wasn't the discussion. The discussion was all about what tariffs were going to do to inflation, and that's what I've been continuing to say. It's a one-time hit to prices. Yep, they go up. Not a good thing. But it's not a thing that him moving interest rates is going to necessarily combat or have much of a thing too. Now, the thought could be that if you drop rates too much, you overstimulate the economy on top of the tariff price increases, then you get inflation on top of that. But I don't think that 125 basis point cut in September is suddenly going to juice the economy so much that we're going to run it high. And my thing is, let's start moving towards a neutral. Let's get to neutral. And then hopefully we can just stand back and let the economy and the consumer do what they do. And the Fed doesn't necessarily need to intervene for some time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. The tariff thing, I've got a lot of theories on that. My theory would be that everyone's eating a little bit of it right now, and then it'll slowly leak to the consumer, but it may take a little bit longer than just one big hammer. And I think that's what we're seeing, that everyone from the country that sends it over is eating some, the shipping people, everyone's eating a little bit of it. And I think you're right about that. Hey, more importantly, because I ran way long in my first segment, you and I will be up at the Colts game, Dolphins game, I should say Dolphins game for you, on Sunday afternoon. That's going to be a lot of fun up there at Lucas Oil Stadium. I hope the top is open. I have no reason to think they wouldn't open the top. That's a great experience when they do. What are your predictions? I know Glass is going to hammer you on this Friday. He told me that yesterday when I called into his show. I don't know. I mean, I don't know, because the Dolphins on paper look like they should beat the Colts. I mean, in my opinion, from the quarterback to the receivers to defense across. I mean, defense wins championships, as we all know. And the Colts are just too many unknowns. What's your prediction on Sunday? I know you're a huge Dolphins fan. Put that aside.
I think both teams have lots of questions that need answered for this season. We won't get all of those answers on Sunday, but we will get some of those answers. I do have some concerns with the Dolphins in that they didn't make some of the off-season moves that I felt that they needed to make to shore the team up and to potentially be better this year than they were last year. Now, that being said, on paper, I agree. The Dolphins should be able to win this game, especially if they think they're a playoff team. If you can't beat the Colts on the road, given where they're at right now and some of their deficiencies, well, then I question whether or not you're a playoff team and you're going to be in contention. As I always say, like I've been saying to Glass with the Reds, I don't want to just make the playoffs. I want to have an opportunity to win in the playoffs. So it's the same with the Dolphins. I don't want to squeak into the playoffs and then just go home a loser again and continue the streak of, I don't even know how many years it's been since they've won a playoff game, but it's been far too long. I want to make the playoffs with a legit possibility of winning. And if that's the type of team you are, I think you should be able to beat the Colts on the road. But as I said, there are lots of question marks yet to be answered for both of these clubs. And we'll begin that process of answering some of these questions on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll have fun either way. And look for it on Facebook. I'll probably get a group picture of us Colts people and those Dolphins people. And I've got Dolphins fans coming from out of state that we've done things with them every year, like Kentucky Derby, Indy 500. And this time it's and we were at MetLife Stadium, Colts and against the Giants. Giants were terrible and they beat us, and guess what, we got the quarterback. So anyway, that's how it goes. We'll have fun, we'll get a group picture, but you still have Tua. So I think you have a big leg up on the Colts. Hot Rod, great job as always. We'll listen to you for your Friday afternoon, Glass in the afternoon, Big Show Friday, and then I'll see you back at the ranch, and we'll have a great weekend of Indiana football, Colts football, and great weather to boot.
Yep, looking forward to it, Dave. Have a great show, and I will talk to you later.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the big, beautiful tax bill, lots of education is still needed. I did that program, but people are still asking me, how's it work for the bonus deduction for seniors? How does the overtime thing work? How does the tips thing work? And, what about the Trump accounts for newborns? How in the heck does that work? When we come back, I'm going to highlight a few things again just to educate those so you can educate others. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you, Rod, for being part of the program. That's the shortest segment I've ever had Rod on, but when you go as long as I did the first segment, obsessing over the 4% rule, I had to cut him a little bit short. All right, we're going to move on. I have the big, beautiful bill, lots of education needed for the overtime tips. People over 65 explained, and what about those Trump accounts for newborns? How the heck do those work? Well, where do you want to start? Let's start with the senior bonus deduction. Now, that's for people 65 or older. They get it's 65 or older, and this is effective from 2025 through the end of 2028. You get an extra $6,000 standard deduction. If you're married, you both get it. It's $12,000 on top of the $1,600 that you already were going to get. So that moves your standard deduction from $30,000, right? Then you add in the normal, was it $1,600 or $1,650? I'm trying to find it real quick. Anyway, whatever that extra deduction is for being over 65. And then on top of that, you get the extra $6,000. Now that does phase out, but it's phase out starting at $150,000 for married filing joint and doesn't phase completely out until you have over $250,000 of income. Cut that in half if you're single. That is a big opportunity for me. I'm looking at it thinking, okay, this is going to allow us to make some major, major hay when it comes to moving from taxable to tax-free. In fact, when you look at a married filing joint couple, you know, making called $100,000 a year, earning at the $100,000, and by the time you throw in the new standard deduction of $3,150, you get another $3,200, that's the number, for married filing joint for two people, plus another $12,000. You drive your taxable income from $100,000 all the way to $53,000. It's almost cut your taxable income in half from your gross income. And then you go through the tax brackets. The first $23,000 is at 10%. The next $29,000 is at 12%. So when you add that all up, at $100,000 over 65, your effective tax rate, 5.9%, cheapest has ever been in the history of civilization, pretty much, at least since tax rates were introduced back in 1913. All right, so what about tips? Let's go through that real quick. So the tip deduction allows taxpayers to deduct up to $25,000 in their tips annually, while the overtime deduction covers $12,500 in extra overtime pay. And again, that's through the end of 2028. Just 25 this year through the end of 2028. Now, again, it starts to limit that after you get over $150,000 of income. But going back to the tips thing, so I'm around a lot of servers because I eat out a lot, number one. We have lunch out a lot with vendors, and my wife and I and friends eat out a lot. We love the Malibu Grill, and we love the, you know, Uptown, and a lot of other great restaurants around as well. But we're pretty dialed into probably, like most of you are, maybe five places that we go to a lot. And it's interesting because most of the places I go, people know who I am and what I do, including like the Porthole Inn, right? And everyone knows my affiliation with the Porthole by now. If you haven't, then we put a group of friends together to save the Porthole. And the workers out there, they found out what I did early on, and I became a sounding board from everything, from how do you do a Roth IRA, debt consolidation, divorce stuff, and more stuff I probably didn't know anything about. They'd ask me things. So, and then, you know, I said, I should have told them when they said, what do you do? Some of them already knew, but I'm like, I should have said, I'm like a plumber, but then I'm like, well, then they would have expected me to fix the toilet or electrician or something like that. But anyway, bottom line, they're hungry for information. They have no idea how this stuff works. They don't know who to ask. And that was 3 years ago before our good friend AI and ChatGPT came along. But even now, after you put that stuff in, they still don't know. They don't know. Their minds are literally they're not wired that way. Now, this isn't 100% of them, but the ones that I'm talking about, it's like a foreign language to them. So even if it says something, they're going to be like, wait, well, deduction? Does that mean I get refund? I mean, they don't know even the difference between deductions and refunds and standard deductions and none of that kind of stuff. So I'm like, here's how it works. It's going to be a big deal for a lot of people. Because most of them, you know, a lot of them make cash tips, right? And they don't report that. Everyone knows they don't report that. But if most of the transactions are credit cards any longer, right? How many of us pay with cash? Not many. Well, that all gets reported as tips. And then sometimes they have to wait a week or so to get their money. And then they get their money and it's reported on the W-2 as tips. And they have to pay taxes on the tips. And now they have this big, beautiful, bright deduction, as President Trump would put it. And then the overtime thing. You know, a lot of people are on salary and all that kind of stuff. We don't have overtime at my office. Everyone's on salary. But, you know, if you work for a cook, that's huge. because a lot of times they have mandatory overtime. They're putting an extra 10 hours a week in overtime. And if they can pick up a deduction of $12,500, that's huge that they don't have to pay any federal income tax on. So I'm just trying to educate people on it's super easy. It's just an extra deduction you get for overtime, which that means that the W-2s, the payroll people, they're going to have to get on it to get this stuff updated, because nowhere on your W-2 does it say overtime. It does on your pay stub. Usually it'll say overtime. So hopefully it's not a huge thing for them to figure out a way to report it on a W-2. And that's actually the reason that the 401k providers didn't have the automatic Roth contribution for people that made over a certain amount of money. If you are playing catch up when you're over 50, remember that, like if you're in the part of Secure Act 2.0, that starts next year. It wasn't the 401k providers that couldn't get their act together. It was the payroll providers. They couldn't figure out how to do it. But it shouldn't be that hard, because they've been doing it for years on Social Security, because Social Security, once you hit a certain limit, you don't pay on Social Security into Social Security any longer. Boom. Well, it shouldn't be any different to say, okay, once they hit this limit, when they put their contributions in, it has to go into the Roth side of things. So there's a lot of stuff going on there, but there is also a lot of opportunity, once again, for the next few years. But when 2029 comes around, a lot of this goes away. All right, the Tax Foundation says it will cost us $3.2 trillion, but who really knows? The thing I picked up in my conversation with Senator Young last week was anything and everything is on the table. The idea to get to get the highest impact of revenue with the lowest noticeability, like tariffs. We don't really know how this is all going to impact the consumer yet, as Rod and I were talking about. But anyway, we're going to talk about that, because a lot of folks are like, oh, this big, beautiful tax bill is really a big, beautiful bankrupt bill, which I love that. I use it in every presentation I've given so far. But is it really? I don't know. I'm going to talk about permanency of the tax code, a little bit about the history of our tax code, what the Congressional Budget Office has to say about things, and what you can do now to protect yourself and your family and your future from higher tax rates that I believe still are coming. I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Man, I'll tell you what. You go through the Big Beautiful Bill Act of 2025, and you're like, man, you're giving all these incredible deductions. Well, don't forget, the math people had to figure out how to reconcile it. What does that mean? Make it revenue neutral. Well, that's not necessarily the case, according to the Tax Foundation, who says it's going to cost us about $3.2 trillion, this bill will, over the next 10 years. But who really knows, right? The thing I picked up again from Senator Young last week was anything and everything is always on the table. And it definitely is on the table whenever it's a high impact but low noticeability revenue. And that's where you go back to the required minimum distributions, right? Because no one knows, really, most people don't know how required minimum distributions work. If you're born in 1960, they start at 75. And you're like, well, how much do I have to take? Right now it's about 3.65%. of your year-end balance. Year one, it goes up every year after that. How's that determined? Well, it's based on this thing called a uniform table, which assumes you have a spouse 10 years younger. So you divide it by like 27 or 28. And they're like, I'm like, well, no one at 75 or the IRS doesn't believe you're going to live for 27 or 28 years. And that's supposedly how it's calculated. So eventually you drain your IRA and it's all taxed during your lifetime. Well, we know it never happens. So they have a single life table that's been used for inherited IRAs and other reasons for years, that they could simply say behind the scenes, hey, we're going to change this law, maybe do it during Christmas time or during a natural disaster or during a war or some other big news things out, and no one would notice. And basically your required distributions go to single life, and now at 75, you're dividing your balance by, you know, 16 or 17, not 27. And your distributions are, you know, literally, you know, what, 30, 40% higher? Well, that's more money out. That's more money taxed. That's more revenue. See, that's high impact, low noticeability stuff. There's all kinds of other things that I can think of. But, like, is the tariffs going to create a lot of revenue to offset some of this? I don't know. Again, I'm talking to Rod. I think everyone's eating a little bit of it right now at one big hit, but it maybe shakes out over time. The consumer over time takes more and more, and it becomes more of a natural feeling of the costs of things going up. I don't know for sure. So there's a lot. There's a lot. There's a lot. There's a lot. But here's the thing. When you look at the history of our tax code, you know, we started off in 1913, and it was like 7%. And it was really, again, kind of harmless. It was more of a temporary tax, kind of floating it out there to see if Americans, how they would react. And then we were hooked. And then it's been nothing short of a roller coaster ever since. I mean, we go through times where during wartime where the top rate was sometimes around 94%. In 1943, it was 94%. And it was only on those making $200,000 a year or more. And you're like, well, who made that kind of money? Well, I always use this analogy because I think it's great, and it's funny, and it's relatable. But we all know him. Actor-turned-politician Ronald Reagan, that's what he made. In fact, he would get paid $100,000 per full-featured film, and he would only make two a year. Otherwise, he would only keep 6 cents of what he earned over that. And then you flash forward to today, and our tax rate, our highest tax rate, is around 37%, the lowest 10%, and for some it's zero. But what does the Congressional Budget Office have to say about this? Every February or March, and I tend to talk about it every February or March, it says, if Social Security and Medicare go unchanged, the lowest bracket would need to go from 10 to 25, 24 to 63, and the highest from 37% to 88%. Now, everyone's skeptical out there, right? But look back in time. From 1960 to 63, even into the early 70s, the lowest marginal rate was around 20%. And the middle rate was around 69, and the highest rate was 91. Now, you might say, okay, but there are a lot more deductions. So that's true. You could deduct interest on your credit cards. There was all kinds of stuff that was different. But the bottom line is the tax rates have been nothing short of a roller coaster. And we've been there before. And the old adage is, those that don't study history are destined to repeat it. And that's why I carry my mom's tax return and dad's tax return around from 1973, because there were three boys around at that point. And they made a whopping $16,000 that year. H&R Block, thank you very much. Thank you to my mother for some reason keeping her taxes for 50 whatever many years. But anyway, $16,000, and because they got a standard deduction of $2,000, and they had three boys, so they were $500 apiece deductions, they got their income all the way down to $13,469. But even after that, you know what their federal tax was? $2,600, 20%. That's crazy, because in today's world, this situation with child tax credits, which credits are money, real money, not a deduction, and that was a difference between my conversation with servers and people, or the difference between a deduction and a credit. Credit's real money. Deductions are deduction against the income at which your tax is calculated. But we would have tax credits, huge, standard deductions, you know, all these benefits, and they probably wouldn't pay any tax in today's world. I haven't done the actual math. It's kind of wonky when you try to figure out all that kind of stuff, but it is what it is. So even though, you know, we've had the big, beautiful bill and it's now permanent, and again, permanent is not permanent. Permanent is because we had the House, the Senate, and the executive branch all lined up together on the Republican side. We have had the same thing on the Democratic side. If the Democrats come along and they say, you know what, we don't like the big, beautiful bill, we're going to change it, then they can change it under reconciliation. So do not think about it as being permanent. In fact, the federal estate tax has now been made permanent. I can't even tell you how many times in the history of federal estate tax have been made permanent. When I first started, I've told this a million times, the federal estate tax limit was $600,000 and you were subject to federal estate tax. Went to $1,000,000, $2,000,000, $5,000,000, $10,000, went away to zero, back to $5,000,000, back to $10,000,000, then to $20,000,000. Oh, and it was set to go back again in half of that. But then here comes the big, beautiful bill, and it makes like $30 million or something crazy. So it's nothing. You can't rely on any of this stuff. And that's why I also carry around with me when I do presentations the republication, or whatever you want to call it, of the notification to the United States people about Social Security in your old age. This goes out to the employees of industrial and business establishments. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read you a little bit of this. Literally, this stuff was... So think about Social Security. It was, when it was developed back as part of the New Deal, it was never meant to be a retirement thing, right? It was insurance. When it was first implemented, it was part of the New Deal, 1935. The math worked based on birth rates, life expectancies. This thing is viable in perpetuity. There were 42 people paying in for every one person taking out. The retirement age was 65. Life expectancy was 62. So if you made it to 65, no one expected you to draw on it more than a few years and then die. They didn't think you'd be on for 25 or 30 years. That's why they call it old age insurance. It wasn't intended to be a retirement program. It was simply insurance against living a really long time. But that has changed because now it is an integral, an important part of folks' Social Security. So I'll read you this. This is part of the little brochure that went out to all Americans. And this is part of the tax. All right, that is to say, I'll start here. During the next 3 years, beginning January 1st, 1937, you will pay 1 cent for every dollar you earn. And at the same time, your employer will pay 1 cent for every dollar you earn, up to $3,000 a year. That's how you're going to pay for Social Security, just so you know. The very last line of this paragraph, and if you want to copy this, go to cfci.us. I'd be happy to scan it and email it to you. Contact us. I'll send it. You'd enjoy reading the entire thing. It's like 4 pages long. But the last sentence says, that's the most you'll ever pay. So I think, okay, folks, this was permanent back in 1935, starting in 1937. So I'm just telling you guys, I don't know where revenue is going to have to come from, because when you're spending 90 cents of every dollar on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt, where else, what are you going to do? Double taxes like the CBO says? Probably not, but you've got to come up with something. Cut expenses. We've already seen the Doge come through and cut hardly anything, and they were making a big splash. So anyway, I'm going to take a big break, come back. We'll wrap up the show in two quick segments. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. I need an hour and a half show when I got a lot to say. Okay, so I get asked all the time, can I own real estate in my IRA? What other things can I own in my IRA? What are the risks? What are the potential rewards? Well, self-directed IRAs, since 1975, when IRAs were first introduced as part of the Employment Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA, people have been asking those questions, but they expanded what people could actually invest in. It has to be self-directed generally. What's allowed and what's not allowed? Well, I was hoping to have time to talk about it, but I don't. So I'm going to kick it to next week. I'm going to take a quick break, come back, and we will wrap this booger up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right. Yeah, I'll talk about this next week. I think it's because people ask me all the time, you know, what can I own? Can I own a partnership? Can I own part of my business? You know, always consult with a tax advisor before making what could be a big, beautiful thing or a big, beautiful, disastrous thing when it comes to IRAs. You certainly don't want to blow your IRA up by trying to, you know, be tricky or do something that isn't allowed. There's so many rules you have to follow, and I'll get into that next week, I promise. So I hope everyone has a great weekend. I hope you enjoy Friday night, whatever you're doing, whether it's the Bloomington Speedway, whether it's high school football, or whether it's hanging out at home, or hanging out with friends, or going to dinner. I hope you have a great Saturday, whether it's hanging out at the Memorial Stadium. Hope you have a great Sunday, whether it's on youth football field, hanging out on the lake, or going to the Colts game, which would have been all options for me. So have a great one, everyone. I'll talk to you again next week. Enjoy the weather. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.